The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.
My next guest is a hibernophile. I looked that one up, by the way. Fernando Fidanza is from Italy. And what makes him a hibernophile, and what actually isn't a hibernophile, is that he's a person who's fond of Irish culture, Irish language and Ireland in general. And Fernando is so fond of us that he's creating a book and a documentary, as well as travelling and performing songs. And he is in the Southeast this week and tour in the next few months as well. He joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning to tell us more. Did you know you were a hibernophile, Fernando?
I didn't know, and now I'm happy and excited. Thanks. Thank you, and hello to all your listeners.
And hello to you. Will we play a little bit of your music, because you will be in Gorey this week in two venues in Gorey, and people will hear this is the sort of music that you play.
Yes, well, I play kind of Italian folk music.
Okay.
Basically, the song that I'm gonna play are from my CD.
Lovely.
That is called.
Let's have
Old
a little
folk
listen to your gorgeous Italian voice here singing.
Poche parole, poche parole pesate.
So, am I right in saying that you're going to translate some of your songs into English for the nights that you're in Gorey?
Yes, I will sing them in Italian and English, and I will give to all my new fans and new supporters like a little booklet with my translation.
Oh, lovely.
It's not going to be a perfect English, but you get the gist of what I'm talking about.
Okay, good stuff. And where are you from in Italy, Fernando?
I'm from Rome.
Lovely. So very different to Ireland.
Yes. And in some way, well, Ireland has always been part of my life.
Okay.
Of my, at least for my my musical life, because of, if I have the time to tell you a little story,
yeah,
when
do.
I was a kid. So it all starts with, you have to know something about the peculiar, typical parenting method in Italy.
Okay.
If your son is very bad in school, you give him a lot of gifts to encourage him.
A lot of presents and gifts, okay.
And if you're a very good student, you have a lot of shaking hands and pat on the shoulders by your parents.
Okay.
So I was lucky because my brother used to skip school three times a week. He didn't like to study.
Okay.
And he's 10 years older than me. He's actually he wrote the lyrics of the song that you just broadcast. And he's a writer now. So a lot of presents for him. And within the presents, among the presents, there were an electric guitar.
Ah, wow.
He
big presents then. So quite
I
large presents.
Yes. Exactly. Didn't help with his studies, but okay. So I fall in love with the guitar, and my brother, that was my musical mentor at the time, now I'm his, but don't tell him. He as a gift, he bought me U2, the Joshua Tree's album book with all the chords. To learn all the U2 songs, because it was one of his favorite bands. So my first experience with music is actually with an Irish band.
Wow. Okay. And when did you first come to Ireland then?
Well, what happened is that I started to play every day, every day, every day. Then probably my parents were tired of me playing in my room, like also because at the time I used to play metal. And so one day they were like fed up and they told me, okay, Fernando, listen, we love you, but we cannot take it anymore. Go to Ireland. I was 13, 14 years old. Go to Ireland, learn English, play guitar. They're going to be nice to you. Don't worry.
Wow.
I was happy, of course, but also a little scared.
Mm-hmm.
But then Irish people were so welcoming and so warm to me. And listen, Orla, I'm not that good now. Imagine how good I was when I was 14. But everybody was so nice and they listened to me. They helped me. They gave me a lot of advices in the streets of Cork. Cork was the city that I went to.
And where did you go? Did you stay with someone or did you have family in Cork or what did you do?
No. The project was like play in the streets, earn money on the street and buy your B&B or whatever.
Wow. And you were the kid in your family who was good at school compared to your brother. And yet
exactly.
this kind of backfired for your parents a little bit.
So that's why everybody's leaving Italy. Because
what a life experience.
So this is my 35 years later. I mean, music became my job in a certain way. I compose music for music and for movies and documentaries. But then after 35 years was the time for me to say thank you to my first musical mother, that is
Ireland.
And always be Ireland.
And when you went to Ireland and learned English, did you then go back and spend your 20s and 30s?
I came back and then I studied music and I studied Chinese, actually. I have a degree in Chinese language. So then I moved to China for 15 years. And 5 years ago, I came back to Italy, and it's enough. I want to live again.
Okay. And are you back in Rome
so
now? Is that where you are?
Again with Ireland.
Oh, lovely. And are you living in Rome at the moment? Or?
Yes.
Lovely. And so now you're back in Ireland and you're doing quite the tour, because you're going to be in 100 Degrees in Gori on April 18th, The Kitchen in Gori April 19th, so the coming few days. And then you head to Wicklow, but then you're back in Kilkenny in May and into June as well. I'll give those dates later on. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to do when you're performing in those different restaurants and venues across the Southeast.
Well, my idea is to shoot a documentary and write a book titled The Sound of Ireland. And I chose this title, The Sound of Ireland, for two reasons. One is because I want to focus on art, of course, but mostly music. So how Irish music is a big part of your everyday life, and how Irish music can teach us, I mean foreigners, about your culture, your history, and your folklore or whatever. And the other reason is that I don't want, obviously it's going to be my point of view, that's for sure, but on the other side, I want Irish people with their voices to tell me the story. So the sound of Ireland is going to be the sound of the voices of Irish friends that I will meet and interview.
Wow. And have you started this yet, or is this a little bit in the future that you're going to record?
I'm leaving next Monday.
Okay. And then you're going
because Gori is actually my second station, let's say, because I was starting Tinahili in Wicklow.
Yeah, just on the Wicklow-Wexford border there. Yeah. And then Gori is your next stop.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm practicing now. I want to show you that I'm better than when I was 13. And
and then people can be involved in your documentary as well, who are there on the night.
Exactly. I'm getting in touch with a lot of Irish musicians and Irish poets, sorry. Uh-huh. And so I can meet them or interview them by phone if we don't have the chance to meet.
Okay.
So it's going to, in my opinion, but I'm always optimistic, it's going to be a great thing.
Brilliant. And such a lovely thing to do as well. And you talked a lot about the people there and being made to feel so welcome when you were just an early teenager, 13 and 14. Is that the main thing you like about Ireland, or what else is it about Ireland for you?
What struck me and continue to strike me whenever I talk to Irish people or I went back a couple of times just for 1 week. The warm feeling of people, and always welcoming and always friendly and always so nice. Okay. I was so happy the first time. Actually, 2 months later, my parents went to Ireland and they had the exact same feeling that I had.
Wow. And did they ever say, Fernando, why they sent you to Ireland and not to the UK, for example? Why Ireland for them when you were 13 and 14?
Well, this is actually going to be also one part of my, story, documentary book. How big the impact of Irish culture had on Italy, Japan, East Germany, obviously Australia, obviously the US. I mean, you have... I don't know if you know, but here in Italy, Ireland has this like power of love, history, and fight, and whatever,
really?
that is so deep in our culture. Every time we think about something like that we have to do with all our heart, one example is always Ireland.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, I'm telling the truth.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so will we give people some dates that you're going to be here? Because you'll be here for quite a time. Or are you going back and forth? Or are you going to stay here for the few months?
I've been in Ireland for 2 months straight, going back and forth all the cities, because I'm, as you can see from my schedule, I'm not so good with direction.
No, geography so wouldn't be your best. No.
Exactly.
So let's tell...
So it's going to be kind of a ping pong table tennis match and me being the ball.
Yes. So you'll have to sleep in your car a few times, I'd say. Let's give those dates. So on Thursday and Friday of this week, that's April 18th and April 19th, you will be in 100 degrees in Gorey. And then the next night, April 19th, you'll be in the kitchen in Gorey. And then you head the Saturday night to Avoca Cafe in Ashford. But the other Southeast dates are in Kilkenny in Petronella Restaurant on May 5th, in Roaches in Duncannon, which is back to County Wexford, on May 24th. Then back to County Kilkenny and Thomastown and Blackberry Cafe on May 31st and June 1st. And then the Waterside in Greignamana on June 2nd. So you mapped that one out right. But if people want to check you out, Fernando, they can on your Instagram. And that's just The Sound Ireland. And you'll see some of the videos of you singing and also those dates of your various performances around Ireland. And as you said, you are writing a book and making a documentary as well. So best of luck with everything, Fernando. And thanks a million for talking to me on the Sunday Grill this morning.
Well, thank you. And I will be thankful forever. Another brick for my love for Ireland.
Oh,
thanks to you and your listeners.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you, Fernando. Talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.
It's Beat 102-103 on a Sunday morning. You're listening to The Sunday Grill, and henparties.ie have been examining online searches for dating apps across the nation over a 5-year period, and it's both a feast and a famine for some parts of the southeast. Kilkenny City ranked the highest on the singletill scale, with the most singles ready to mingle, and that means that online searches for dating apps like Tinder and Hinge and Bumble are the highest in Kilkenny City compared to anywhere else in the world. In Ireland, even, the world would be terrible. While Thurles in neighbouring County Tipperary came last, and Waterford is seventh. To talk us through this and to talk a little bit about being single and how you can turn that around is Mairead the Matchmaker on Instagram, or Mairead Lochman, as she's called in real life, and she joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning. You are very welcome, Mairead.
Good morning. How are you?
Really well. I think we've talked before, have we?
We have, absolutely. It's probably around Valentine's Day, Orla.
Yes, because, you know, when it comes to love and dating, there really is no let up, and you should know that better than anyone else. I think the last time I read an article about you and the amount of people that you've set up, you were hitting was it something like 7,000 dates?
It's over 8,000 now, so it is.
Wow.
Yeah, it just never stops. Every week there's loads of people coming to me to try and find long-term real love. And I suppose the main thing is people are exhausted by the apps. So they want to find someone, you know, that is actually invested in finding love. And anybody that comes to me, because obviously just the money side of it even, people are investing in their romantic lives. So yeah, anybody that comes to me is genuinely looking for love and not just looking for a weekend, basically.
Do you think Kilkenny City should feel a bit bad for themselves if they're the highest on the singleton scale, or does that mean they're just single and ready to mingle?
I don't think so at all. So I've matched over 8,000 people since 2016. Mm-hmm. I travel all over Ireland meeting clients. So I meet clients in Dublin, Galway, Cork, Limerick, Kilkenny, Mullingar and Naas.
Okay.
And so I actually was only in Kilkenny last Thursday meeting clients, and like there's no more excessive numbers in Kilkenny than there is anywhere else in the country.
Okay.
Now it just might be in the look of the survey, but there's people all over Ireland trying to find love. There's people of all ages, all walks of life. Some people are, you know, on their second or third time round even, because of maybe being widowed, because of breakdown of marriage, but maybe they never even got started in the first place, you know. So there are loads of options out there, and I think the main thing is a lot of people are exhausted by online dating, and the problem is as well they are maybe exhausted by the disposable nature of online dating.
Because it was.
And maybe that's what we're talking about.
And it's not a new phenomenon in any way, but it's fairly new when it comes to Ireland, I think. And, you know, are people kind of moving away from it in a little way, do you find? Or, as you said, are they getting a bit fed up of it and want to commit to something? And like you said, if you have to pay a matchmaker, it means the other person who's also paid the matchmaker is more committed as well.
Yeah, I think people are exhausted by it. If you think about it, Tinder was only launched 10 years ago. They only celebrated their birthday, 10th birthday last year.
Yeah.
So if you actually think about it overall, it's relatively new in the grand scheme of humans, is what I would say. So it's not really a natural way to date. Now, as a professional matchmaker and a dating coach, I say to people, whatever way you can meet someone is a good way to meet them, whether it is online dating, whether it is through a matchmaker, through friends, through work, through social clubs, just talking to someone on a bus or an airplane, whatever way it is, that's a great way to meet people. But you actually have to take into consideration as well that people are exhausted by dating apps. And it's very much out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can think about it, the only thing I can really liken it to is, imagine you were out of work and you knew you had to pay your mortgage in the next, you could have enough money to pay this month's mortgage, but you didn't have enough money to pay next month's mortgage. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, I need to meet someone, because you have to remember, it's been driven by loneliness as well. A lot of people out there that are single, they are lonely. And especially since COVID, if they've been single since then, or they've only had kind of short-term relationships since then, it is being driven by loneliness. So yes, they are exhausted by the apps. They say if you're doing it properly, the average person is between 10 and 14 hours a week swiping.
What?
That's a lot of, you know, yes, that's the thing. It's a lot of work.
Wow.
It's like a full-time job for a lot of people.
I'd almost scroll on Instagram for that amount of time, then swipe left or right.
It.
Wow.
I know. And then you have to remember then, of course, you have to be motivated enough to have the talk again of, you know, hi, how are you? Where are you from? What do you do for a living?
And
are you
then
married?
The rejection of it as well. You're constantly being judged.
But even if you're politely rejected, most people could probably take it. For a lot of people, they might be talking to someone for 2 weeks.
And
okay,
then
they may decide they're going to meet this weekend. And next thing, they go into the app the following morning thinking, okay, I'm going to get up, have my shower, put on my makeup and head off to meet this nice gentleman for a coffee today. May have cancelled other plans, you know, because they're putting themselves out there and trying to put their best foot forward. And next thing, they go into the app and the person has like blocked them. They've just disappeared off the face of the earth. And like on a mental health level.
Oh, terrible.
It's absolutely exhausting.
Yeah,
so it is.
Exhausting
so,
is
look,
the perfect word for that.
There are exhausting ways to date, okay? But there are a lot of positive ways to date as well. Like what I say to all my clients is, yeah, do online dating, but you have to remember, a date is not confirmed unless you have a time and location, like confirmed. Also, I would probably at that stage as well start swapping over numbers. You know, if you have a date confirmed, you should have each other's telephone numbers. You shouldn't just be still talking on the app. It's too easy just to block you. So if they're not willing to give you their phone number, we'll say beforehand, the chances are the date isn't going to go ahead. Also, the amount of people that I meet for consultations and I say to them, where's your fun? Like I ask them, what do you like to do for fun? And there is no fun. They're like saying to me, well, I work obviously very hard. I go for a walk. Everything just seems so on their own. So like start doing maybe gym classes. When you go to the gym class,
Marie,
though, don't be buried in your phone.
But at the same time, like we're very Irish. Do we expect, if we're attracted to the opposite sex, for example, do we expect the man to ask us out? If we're attracted to the same sex, do we expect the other person? I don't think I'd have the nerve to say to someone, hey, chashy, 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 now let's go out.
Yeah.
You know, we're very Irish.
Yeah,
that
so
way.
There's nice subtle ways to do it, okay? And I know we are Irish and everything. The other side of it is, it's like if you think of, again, if you don't have a job. You know, like it would be lovely if someone rings you up and says to you, do you want a job? You know, instead of that, we actually have to put ourselves out there. We have to get our CV ready, same as we would get dressed up and make a good profile online or go to a matchmaker. And we have to get out of our comfort zone. That's what it is. The more in your comfort zone you are, the longer you're going to stay single. But I would say as well, if you are out with someone, you're chatting away to them, you know, I won't ever tell someone to do something that I won't do myself. And it is a bit nerve-wracking the first few times you do it. But the worst thing they can say is no. Or the worst thing that can happen is they just don't contact you afterwards. Okay. So like, you know, if you're out and about chatting away to them, you could say, we're heading off here now, but it was lovely chatting to you. Sure. Here, give me your number. We'll give a shout.
Oh,
I'll give you a shout
nice
and go
one.
For coffee sometime.
Okay. Yeah, I get
that's
that.
It. Instead of saying, would you like to go for a coffee sometime? You can just say, we should grab a coffee sometime.
Yeah. Lovely.
Simple as that. Yeah. That's it. And then it might save a little bit of embarrassment on both sides. They might just give you the number, but they might say afterwards, look, I actually have just started seeing someone.
Yeah.
They can come up with any number of excuses. I always say just blame it on chemistry. You might say, look, I really enjoyed talking to you, but I just don't know if there'd be enough romantic chemistry to meet somebody again.
Oh,
to meet you again.
The lingo. And, well done.
Yeah.
And I was just going straight for will you shift my friend kind of thing.
So no. but that's how I started out as a matchmaker, though, when I was 15, asking that question. So we've got a little bit more subtle since then, Orla.
True. Now, you but, do actual matchmaking at Love HQ, don't you?
Yeah.
So you are, it's not all, like the initial meetings and all can be set up by you. So that's just taking it one step further, isn't it?
Yeah, so I basically meet all my clients for a consultation. I get to know them, the type of person they'd like to meet, and then anything else that I feel might help me to match them. Sometimes we need to have a conversation about maybe increasing their confidence. Some people are very shy, and that's maybe what's after holding them back. Sometimes it might be a conversation about turning down their confidence. Sometimes, you know, I ask everybody to come to their consultations dressed as if they were going on a date. That also gives me a good reflection as to how they're going to show up. But also the reason I meet them all in person is because I get to see their confidence levels. You know yourself, you're on a Zoom call, the chit chat is not there. So I need to be able to gauge how chatty someone is, how confident they are in themselves. Then from there, I arrange their dates. So I give them a call, tell them about the other person and vice versa. And then I arrange the dates. So I might send them to somewhere like the New Park Hotel in Kilkenny for a coffee. Mm. I might send them to, you know, there's lots of different places down around the southwest that southeast that I send them. You know, just gently coffee dates.
Yeah.
Like you could do big dinners, you could do drinks, everything like that. What is dating? Dating is two people just getting to know each other.
Yeah.
It is as simple as that. People are at all different stages. I get a lot of people that are widowed, unfortunately. So it's going very gently with them. I also get people that maybe concentrated a lot on actually building their career and maybe just didn't have the opportunities there for dating. So, you know, giving them a bit of confidence and how to start back into it. For a lot of people, they might have been married and here they are back out on the dating scene.
Yeah, or back from Australia,
so, you know,
back from Canada, something like
all
that.
All of those things.
All of those things.
And so I arrange the dates. I follow up them after their date. If I feel they have some feedback. My gentleman there recently, he was telling me he's great fun, and he was great fun during his consultation and everything. But his feedback after his date is that he was quite boring, actually.
Okay.
And so, you know, now look, two things can happen there. One thing could be that he
nerves,
you know, just didn't fancy her.
Well, yeah.
One could be nerves. Two, he maybe just didn't fancy her.
Okay.
So it could be people are different if there's chemistry and if there isn't chemistry. And look, he didn't get the second opportunity to make a first impression. So that's the other thing. A lot of people say it takes me a little bit of time to warm up and get to know the person, but actually you only get one chance to make a good first impression on a first date.
True.
So, you know, kind of hitting the ground running is very important.
Brilliant. Some great advice there. If you want to check out Mairead's website, she's Ireland's leading matchmaker. It is lovehq.ie, but she's also on Instagram. She is Mairead the Matchmaker. And Mairead, thanks a million for joining me this morning.
Thank you. A pleasure as always.
The Sunday Grill on Beat 102 103.
Well, April is Bowel Cancer Awareness Month, and the Marie Keating Foundation have partnered with patients, ambassadors and medical professionals to share an important message. 2,560 men and women are diagnosed with bowel cancer in Ireland every year, and 1 in 10 diagnoses are under 50, and that's why we are talking about it today here on Beat. Helen Dunn was just 36 when she was diagnosed with bowel cancer, and she'd just gone back to work after maternity leave, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about what she experienced on the Sunday Grill this morning. You're very welcome, Helen.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for coming on and telling us about what must have been a very hard journey in your life. And is it a journey that you feel is finished up now, or is it ongoing?
And I hope that my journey is now finished up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was definitely it wasn't a full year. I'm coming up to I was diagnosed in May 2023, and I finished up kind of like I had my surgery just there in January 2024. And after that, once I recovered from that, that was it. So hopefully that I'm at the end of my treatment now.
Okay, so you didn't have to have chemo or radiation or anything like that?
Oh, I did. I had
beforehand.
So with my type of cancer, rectal cancer, I had chemotherapy, FOLFIRINOX, quite a strong one, for 6 months. And I didn't have to get radiation because I had such a good response to my chemo. So initially it was said I would have to get both. But I got, so my, the, I think the goal with mine was to shrink it down as much as possible, and then it's easier to operate on. So that's why I had to kick the chemo first. But I think after I had a scan after my fifth, so I was going in that day for my sixth chemotherapy, and I had a scan that day, and it showed it could barely be picked up then on the MRI because I had such a good response to my chemo. So
brilliant.
My oncologist decided that because I was going to skip radiation, I would get the full 12 chemo. So I finished my chemotherapy in late November 2023.
And we have to remember that you are also bringing up very small children while all this is happening as well.
Yes. When I was diagnosed, I have three girls. Wow. My youngest was finishing up in junior infants. She was my oldest was five. Then I had a 3 year old. She just turned four in January this year. And then my baby at the time was 7.5 months. So, yeah.
So that definitely wasn't part of the story that you wanted to tell about having small children also going through a cancer diagnosis.
Absolutely not. No, I'd never in my wildest dreams would have ever thought that I would have ever been like, my mum unfortunately passed away from breast cancer when she was 55. And I probably thought, oh God, I hope I don't get breast cancer. But bowel cancer would not be in my family or anything like that. So I never, ever thought that that's what would happen to me. I was just so shocked for the first couple of months.
And one of the reasons that we're talking to you, Helen, is because the incidences of younger people having bowel cancer are rising every year in Ireland and worldwide. And I suppose, you know, a lot of the online newspapers that I read or talk about this an awful lot. And I suppose a lot of that is to do with Kate Middleton's cancer diagnosis as well at such a young age. But when it comes to signs and screening, because you're only really getting screening for something like bowel cancer from 59 onwards. So what happened to you that you went to the doctor?
Because one of the midwives said it to me after I had the baby that I had a hemorrhoid. So basically that's what I thought it was. Then the blood turned a little bit darker and I was just like, oh God, I'm going to go to the doctor. Maybe I should give me cream or something. And when I went to my doctor, my GP, thankfully she looked at me and she did an exam. She said, yeah, I think it is hemorrhoids. But she was like, I always just like to send people for colonoscopies if there's any bleeding. And thankfully I had private health insurance and I was seen really, really quickly, like a few weeks later. And then unfortunately that's when I was diagnosed. But yeah, if she had given me cream that day, I would have happily gone on my way, accepted what she said, and I wouldn't have really been that concerned because that was really the only kind of symptom that I was suffering from. I didn't really have a change of bowel habits, not that I can remember. So it's just so shocking, and that's what I would say to anybody who, like, that's why I'm part of the Marie Keating No Regrets campaign. Like, if you are eligible to get checked for 59 to 69, obviously avail of it. And if we want that brought back to 50, which really isn't even young, like isn't even enough, but it'll do for the moment. But anyone who's my age who has symptoms, just get checked. Go to your GP. If you're not happy with the cream or whatever, just say, no, I want a colonoscopy, because that's really the only way that you could be fully sure that it's not, you know, anything more sinister.
And what are some of those symptoms?
Some of the symptoms would be obviously bleeding, change in bowel habits. So any kind of change at all, if you're going more, if you're going less, what wouldn't be normal for you, basically, and feeling tired, feeling bloated. I think they're kind of the main losing weight. Mm-hmm. Those kind of, yeah, they would be the kind of the main symptoms of it, which would be kind of symptoms of a lot of a lot of illnesses that aren't as serious as bowel cancer. So you might just kind of just wave them off and say, oh, it could be like hemorrhoids, or it could be a bit of IBS or something like that. Mm-hmm. So this is to say, please get checked.
Yeah. And as we always hear, it's all about early diagnosis when it comes to cancer and making sure that you get it early so it can be treated. And we can get more details on those symptoms on mariekeating.ie. And that's where you'll see the campaign for Bowel Cancer Month as well, which, as you said, Helen, is No Regrets. And there's a really powerful video on there with yourself and lots of other people who are in their mid to late 30s into their 40s and 50s who were diagnosed with cancer. And it's quite stark to see that and hear their stories and hear your story as well.
Yeah, it is. And it's, I think I probably was so shocked because I used to get my chemotherapy in every Wednesday. And everybody basically who had my oncologist was kind of all in together getting their chemo that day. So realistically, the vast majority of people getting the chemo when I went in had bowel cancer. And there's just so many people, so many young people. And then unfortunately, so many people who were diagnosed as stage four because they just didn't really have many symptoms and they didn't get checked in time, you know, and it just, you know, I felt really awful and like sad about myself before I started treatment because I was like, I'm so young and, you know, but then when I went in to get treatment, I was kind of like, oh my God, I'm actually so lucky that, you know, I have an end date for my treatment. You know, I'd be like, oh, six more to go, four more to go. And then, you know, the people who are in there and they might be on chemo for life, they're so positive and they're living so well and living, you know, just so nice and everything. So it kind of brought it home to me, you know, that I was very lucky to get it checked early.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is a positive in that as well.
Yes. Yes.
So we're talking to you today. We're not trying to terrify people. Obviously, we're just saying that if you have symptoms, get yourself checked. And as you said, they want to bring down the screening from 59 to 50. But just really know yourself. And if something is different, go to your doctor. Like, you know, it could be anything, but it's good to get that checked out, isn't it?
Absolutely. Get yourself checked. Like, you know, your health is all you have. Yeah. You know, you might be just like, oh, I'm busy or, you know, I'll go next month and things like that. And I know somebody who has the same type of cancer as me, unfortunately, have passed away now. Mm. They just left it a few months. Just go and get checked out. And I'm not trying to scare because it could be absolutely nothing. And hopefully it probably is. But just get yourself checked out. And if you're not happy with what, you know, you've been told in your doctors or anything like that, just, you know, push for it. Be your own, like, you know, advocate. Just, you know, make sure that you get, that you're happy with whatever, you know, the GP says. And if you're not, you know, just push for it. You're entitled to, you know, advocate for yourself. As I say, just get checked. That is just the main thing. Just get checked.
Exactly. And I suppose people are so terrified of cancer. It is such a scary word, but you're at the other end now. And like, do you have any advice or what would you say after coming out from the other end? What have you learned from this?
Basically learn to just enjoy life and be really happy with what you've got. Mm-hmm. And that you're actually stronger than you think. I mean, loads of people have said to me, oh my God, you're so strong. You came through chemotherapy with three young kids, but, you know, my amazing family, my husband, all my close family and friends have been so amazing and support me and everything. And I just, you know, cherish them. And, you know, you're stronger than you think. You'll get through it. You know, don't be scared. Mm-hmm. It's not as bad sometimes as I think. In my head, the worst thing for me was basically probably losing my hair. I didn't think that I would at the start. And then, you know, obviously with small kids, you know, they're like, why are you losing your hair? Because they didn't really fully explain what was wrong with me because they were so young. But I suppose, you know, you just cherish every moment that you have with your family and, you know, get checked if you have any symptoms. Because if you get cancer, it's such a scary word, but if it is found early, it is very treatable. And there's so many new drugs and treatments now for it. So just get checked.
Great advice. Well, I'll let you get back to those three little girls. The website is mariekeating.ie. The campaign is No Regrets 24 and it is Bowel Cancer Awareness Month. And Helen, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.
Across the Southeast, you're listening to Beat 102-103 and it's a Netflix and chill type of day. So Brian, who's a little bit sick, is reviewing Scoop for us on the Sunday Grill this week. It stars Gillian Anderson back to doing what she does best, her British accent, sounding like Margaret Thatcher in, what's the thing on Netflix that she was in? The Royal thing? Why can't I think of the name? The big royal drama, The Crown. Thank you. She just sounds like she was Margaret Thatcher in The Crown, and she just sounds like Margaret Thatcher in this as well. And Billy Piper is in this as well. I've only seen clips, and Billy Piper looks brilliant.
Yeah, Billy Piper would be main character now.
Oh, great! It's an insider account of how the women of Newsnight secured Prince Andrew's infamous 2019 interview about his friendship with convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. I watched the trailer. I'll let you hear a clip of it, and then Brian, who's a little bit miserable, so give him some time now. He has a bit of the man flu. You all right? Oh, coughing. Coughing for effect. Here we go.
An hour of television can change everything.
Three women and a whippet.
Wouldn't have seen that in a BBC studio when I started.
The allegations surrounding Jeffrey Epstein include his friend Prince Andrew.
Sam, let's stop pushing the palace. I want it for us.
You're chasing a story that we're never going to get.
This is the work. My job is booking the people we can't just call up.
Hello, everyone.
You have a problem that won't go away.
We're looking at options. But there is a red line.
I've never been smuggled into a palace before.
If I do an interview, the question is, why you?
With respect, you know how people see you.
Spell it out.
Brandy Andy.
With respect.
There you go, with respect. I really like the look of this, I have to say.
I can't believe it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, and you know...
That's what shook me just when you said it was there.
Yeah, I play this interview to my media students all the time because it's such a really great example of presenting and interviewing skills because Emma Mathis is just cool as a cucumber and so well researched. It's all about the research and knowing what you're talking about.
The research, like I'm a big fan of movies that's like behind the scenes of how things
so
came to be.
So I love that.
I just love seeing how like they're like planning what she'll wear.
Yeah.
Like, are her legs like on show?
Yeah.
And it's like then the first thing she walks into the room and he's like, oh, you're wearing pants. And like this whole conversation made sense.
Yeah. Brilliant. Now, obviously, the background person and the main character, as you said in this, is Billy Piper's character and someone we wouldn't have known about. But this is the person who wrote the book, is it?
I no idea.
OK, so tell us a little bit about this character.
So she's working in Newsnight. She comes in later than everybody else. She goes around saying exactly what she wants to say. And she does her things her way. So
that's who we heard.
I identified with her a lot.
He identifies with that. He says also, exactly what he wants to say.
Yeah, there's two times in this movie where they go in and get kebabs.
Oh, so Brian,
I'm like, I am with
your
her
soul
to the
sister.
End. Yeah. So like it was literally just a case of it's like BBC are announcing cuts and they're like, we gotta play it safe. And she's like, let's go crazier. Let's get the people that like they don't want to get. She manages to get the office of Prince Andrew to get the interview.
Yeah.
And it just kind of goes from there. Then it's kind of just like she getting the interview and the planning stages for it and then the interview itself and then like the afterwards of it. Like,
wow. Like, is it? It's not really a Brian movie, I have to say.
It's
although
not.
Although you said you like to look at things about how things came about.
Yeah, I am. Like, the origins of media is a big thing for me. So it's like, I don't know. I clicked on it being like, I don't know what like to expect because it literally just popped up and I was like, okay, let's go with this. And I was properly in, like, you know, so it's.
And I have to say, I will have to go watch it somewhere else because I no longer have Netflix in my life. And this seems to be a current thing that's not going to come back to my house at all. But someone was watching it in a house I was in and I was like, oh, whatever. And watching this trailer has made me think, I wish I had Netflix to watch this.
It's one of those things, like, it could have been a 6-part series that I would never have watched in my entire life.
Okay, so it worked as a movie for
me. I think it worked as a movie because it's just, like, an interesting story of a moment, you know, so.
Rufus Sewell is in it as well, and Keely Hawes stars in this too. So some really big British hitters in this Netflix movie.
Yeah, and then we also have Connor Swindles, who was in Sex Education as well.
Ah, okay.
So like, he's the first character you see. He's, like, my favourite character in Sex Education. I was like, I'm in. Okay. And then the first thing they do is they see Jeffrey Epstein walking out. A young girl walking out and then Jeffrey Epstein and Prince Andrew walking out. I was like, okay, this isn't going to be a comedy.
No.
I've accepted that now. And then from there, it's just like, it's kind of just one of those like journalism movies. Do you know, like the classics, like...
Forstman versus Nixon.
Yeah, like all those kind of things of like the, like this is just the story, how they broke the story. Mm. And for us, it's like there's so many clips on the interviews. Like there's so many things we know from it.
Yeah.
And it's like how they got the question out of them and how they like were formulating the questions. And even just like the meeting before the interview when they were like, are they going to do it? It was like, are you going to hold back? It's like, I don't even know what the questions are yet. I don't know what I'm going to ask.
Now, does Billy Piper add any comedy relief to it? Because as you said, it is a story that, you know, can't be comedic. It's an incredibly serious, true news story. And... but it seems as if Billy Piper's character adds a bit of feistiness and
she adds feistiness.
Maybe needed comedy to it,
well,
does
like,
she?
There's not exactly a comedy spin. It's more so kind of like like everyone being so serious and then her being like just kind of a bit mad. And that's okay. Like there might be humor in that, but for me, I found that as like preach style. Like I would probably be the same kind of way, like, you know. So it's like it's just the ambition of people that just didn't need to do it. Like they didn't need to get, like, she didn't need to push for this interview.
Uh-huh.
It's just she happened to get it, and then it ended up being like,
yeah,
a global thing that we're talking about 5 years later, like, you know. Just, and this is just icon. One interview.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other journalism films that I really love, and there was the Oscar winner from a few years ago that I have completely,
yeah, well, Mark Ruffalo.
Yes,
in it,
and yeah, that was a great one, and yet I cannot even remember its name.
Spotlight.
Spotlight. Well done.
Yeah.
And there are some great journalism ones out there. And as you said, a behind the scenes movie is something that can be so joyful, I think. Yeah,
like The Boat That Rocks, one of my all time favourite movies. Yeah, that's through behind the scenes of a radio station, by a radio station.
I really love Frost versus Nixon, which is the build up to that big interview with Nixon when he was president.
And then like even like all the biopics, that's all just behind the scenes. And like even the Beatles Get Back stuff, I loved that.
Yeah, and is that up there? Like, did you enjoy it that much?
I wouldn't be on Get Back level for me now, to be fair, but it's definitely solid. It was definitely something that I didn't expect to enjoy as much as I did.
Give us some black puddings for it, please.
I'll give it like I'd push it for an 8, you know.
Okay. I am definitely going to try and get to see this.
Yeah. You can come over to my house and watch on my house. Netflix.
Yeah, but you need to be better.
Yeah, yeah.
Because although I snigger at you when you said you were unwell, you do seem unwell.
Yeah.
You all right?
Tough.
Yeah. 8 black puddings out of 10 for Scoop. It is available on Netflix as we speak. We'll be there for a while, obviously, and really big hitters in there. Gillian Anderson just sounding like Margaret Thatcher as she did in The Crown, which is quite ironic because obviously it's about one of the princes. Keely Hawes in there too. I love Keely Hawes.
Yeah.
A television actress of, you know, there's some really great UK television actresses out there, and Keely Hawes is one of them.
It's just like everyone's solid in it. There's no person that you're like, okay, and they're.
Billy Piper in there too. And what's your sex education person?
Connor Swindle.
Connor Swindle and Rufus Sewell. Thank you so much.
No problem at all.
Get well soon, my friend.
Yeah, I'll be better next week, probably. Yeah. Hopefully.
The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.